Hello there, everyone, and welcome to the Sure IDC podcast, the show about anything and everything. This is Lucas, and let's see what topic we can get into today. We talk about movies, songs, video games, board games, food, books, personality traits, animals, history, anything and everything you can think of. So sit back, relax, because we're just here to have a good time. One of the many statements that come my way often is, "Aren't you good at speaking to people because you are in theater? You should be good at speaking to a large group of people because you are in theater." No. I can safely say that that is not the case. Today we are talking about the similarities and differences between theater and public speaking. To have this conversation with me today, he is back yet again for another episode, and that is Blake. How you doing today?
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Great to be back on this fantabulous program known as the Sure IDC podcast.
Whoop, whoop. Thanks for being on the show. I think the last time you were on, we were talking about live action versus animation.
Yes.
Did you end up not to just derail this whole episode, but did you happen to
previously
watch
on Sure IDC?
Previously, a couple episodes ago. did you happen to watch The Little Mermaid?
I have not seen the live action Little Mermaid. Actually, I want to say I've seen the original animated. I'm pretty sure back when I went to elementary school, that was brought to when we had like indoor recess, if you will. I don't remember what it was called. It was like rest period.
People would bring
VHS stuff to watch, and I'm pretty sure there was one person in particular that liked to bring Little Mermaid. But if I watched it, it was like barely paying attention. So I don't even know if I've like fully sat down and watched the original version. So
you haven't watched the live action version yet?
Nope, I have not. I've seen reviews of it. I've seen the pitch meeting for it, which I think is hilarious. But no, I've not actually gone and seen it yet. Yeah. Is it on Disney Plus currently?
I don't think so. Isn't it still in theaters?
I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know either. It might be. It's definitely not on Disney Plus yet. I haven't seen it yet. I know Ariel, my girlfriend, she has seen it, of course, but that's because, you know, she loves The Little Mermaid and everything. I think they went, you know, maybe a couple nights after opening night. But no, I haven't watched it yet. But maybe when it comes to Disney Plus, but they'll probably put it on a premium and, you know, make it a week of like $20. And it's like, why do they still do that? Does Disney Plus still do that premium thing?
I haven't seen them do that since I think Mulan.
Yeah.
And maybe they did it with Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. I can't remember, but they haven't really been doing that lately. I think because it's gotten such pushback for people being like, "I already pay for this service. Why are you making me pay $20 again?"
It's like, just put it on when you want to put it on. It's like, just put it on right when I can watch it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I ended up watching Mulan, but I waited until they just made it a regular movie on there.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not paying $20 on a service I already paid for, you know?
Yeah. So anyway, rabbit hole there. But yeah, if you have not listened to that episode, go back and listen to it. It's live action versus animation, and it's pretty good episode, actually. So
yeah, I'd say we had an animated conversation about it.
It is true, we did have an animated conversation and a live action conversation about it too.
Yeah, it's kind of mind-blowing if you think about it.
It really is. So public speaking and theater, you know, what's your background in theater? Like, have you done any theater ever? I don't think I've ever asked you this question.
I've done a little bit. Before I went to college, I was actually involved in a skit group at my church, and we would do these different skits and whatnot from just different groups that had already done them. We'd do our version of them and that kind of thing. So I've done group projects where it's, you know, you interacting with a group of people, you're rehearsing your lines. And I've also done, I don't know what the technical term is, but a solo sketch where you're just, you know, you're memorizing all the lines and you're trying to put on a dramatic performance and it's just you.
A one-man show.
One-man show, yes. So I've done a little bit of that, and I actually really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. And yeah, that's about my extent. I didn't really do anything much with it afterwards. We used to have a yearly talent, like a youth group district get together where they'd do like different talents and stuff. So some would do skits, some would do singing, some would do artistic things like with drawing or painting, stuff like that, and they'd be judged for it, and I would compete in some of those with the drama performances, and it was a lot of fun.
So you do have a little theater experience.
I mean, I don't want to brag, but you know, I've been there, done that with about five people.
So. and solo.
Yes, and by myself.
It's so lowly. What is your background in public speaking, however?
I've actually done some public speaking. I've done some for school before. I've given like some smaller speeches at church. Just talking about different things. I think I've done a mini sermon before. Oh. I think that was one of the things that I entered into for that drama youth group contest. I'm pretty sure I did that. But I've done a bit of public speaking. Certainly done a lot of radio and podcasting, of course. So I've had a healthy mix.
Ooh, I didn't even think about that. Technically, are we public speaking right now?
I mean, technically, yeah. It might not be on a stage, but it's available to the public.
That is very interesting. You know, maybe the topic of this conversation is, what is public speaking? But, that's technically right. I mean, podcasts, preaching in church, radio... standing in front of people. That is interesting because, you know, you don't really think about this being public speaking. Unless you're doing a live podcast, I guess, but even if you're like videoing, you don't really see it as public speaking.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on how you define the term. I mean, some may say, well, it's not technically public speaking because you're just talking to each other and people just listen to it later. But I do think there's a certain amount of, should I say, skill that goes into doing something like this as far as confidence level. And I think doing some actual public speaking helps with that.
Yeah.
And vice versa. I think if you can get comfortable with talking in front of a microphone, even if it's just you, sometimes you can use that experience when you public speak in front of people. And yeah. You can pretend that they're not even there, and it's just you and the microphone.
Just you and the microphone. Just like if you were in your room doing a podcast all by yourself. Just like if you were in a one-man podcast.
And all that listens to your podcast is your mom. But hey, you can talk.
You got that one listen. That's all that matters. That's right. All it takes is one listen, folks.
I'm still public speaking.
Well, as people know, I mean, obviously my background in theater, I've done theater, you know, no, schmo, theater, whatever. Just everyone knows that I've done it. And public speaking.
What?
What?
You?
Me, who does theater reviews and musical reviews and everything? Of course, my background in public speaking, I mean, it really just comes down to if you consider public speaking and theater the same thing. Because if you do, I am great at public speaking. If you don't, I might not be the best at it. I mean, obviously, I took a class in college, public speaking class. And I mean, I can stand up in front of a group of people and try my best to talk to them. I can. But do I enjoy it? Not necessarily. So I guess I really don't have a lot of background in public speaking in that sense. If you want to consider public speaking as standing up in front of a large group of people in the same space as public speaking. But, I mean, if you consider this public speaking, then, well, yeah.
Really, we just need to get you in front of a live studio audience, and then we can really see what you're made of.
I'd be a nervous wreck. I feel like I'd be a nervous wreck. It's insane. Like, I really... So, like I said, I took a public speaking class in college, and I'm pretty sure I was a straight B student in college. But I think I got two C's in my time, and I want to say one of them was public speaking. Because it was the tests. Like, I mean, I love the teacher to death, but like her tests were so difficult, and I'm not a test taker. So,
but. Did you have Dr. McNeil?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I did too.
Yep. Yep. So, but it is interesting because in the class, I mean, obviously in the class, you learn how to public speak, you learn, you know, how to write a speech and how to, present it. It's just interesting, like public speaking class. I mean, they teach you how to public speak because it's a very important thing. And there's some people that would never do it ever again in their life, but they still teach you it. So, I mean, just like a lot of those things they teach, but that's not this type of episode. let's talk. You mentioned something about radio, which I kind of want to talk a lot about because that's, and podcasting can, I guess, be formed into that. But what's your experience with public speaking in radio form?
Well, I mean, it kind of goes back to just the different events that I would do with the radio station that I worked with at College of the Ozarks. You know, we would do the traditional, what you would consider traditional radio, where you're in a studio and you've got music playing and you'll occasionally jump in between songs and give like a weather update, talk about what's coming up next, yada yada yada. And we'd have regular radio programs. Each person would that would air live on the station. So that was something that definitely gave me practice with, you know, learning, like building my craft, trying to figure out, okay, how do I want to present myself when I'm on the air? Because yeah, it's primarily audio, right? You're not watching someone on the radio, but mm-hmm. in many ways it's just as much of a performance as theater, because you're enunciating your words a certain way, you're trying to put emphasis on certain words or emphasis on certain points, mm-hmm. and you're moving your hands around, you're getting animated, and it just kind of helps draw out that personality. So doing a show like that by yourself and with other people really helped with that too. But I'd say another thing that was really fun to do was did you ever go to the farmer's market at C of O?
Mm-mm. Well, maybe like once or twice.
Yeah. So what we would do typically during the summer when we didn't have classes is each week, I believe it was once a week, either every Thursday or Friday, we would take some equipment down there and hook a few things up, and we'd actually broadcast from farmers market. So we'd interact with people there. We'd, you know, talk about what's happening at the farmer's market. What did the chefs cook for people on the stage, that kind of thing. There was just different stuff that happened. So, I think that really helped with just developing that sense of interaction with other people, with people that are next to you, because I don't know, I find it easy sometimes to do a show by yourself, but sometimes if you have somebody with you, it can be easy, but depending on who it is or if you have someone that's just kind of watching you, it can be really nerve-wracking. So practicing with that, getting used to people listening to you talk, especially if you have someone who is critiquing you afterwards, like giving you feedback on, okay, how do you do this better? It'd be kind of nerve-wracking, but I think the more you do it, it's kind of like theater. The more you do it, the more you just go for it, even when you're nervous, it just kind of helps. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily take the fear away, but it does help you push forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's just the way you think about it. Like, when you're on the radio, do you, like, does it ever, I mean, obviously it occurs to you, but do you ever think, oh, I'm talking to people right now? Like, people are listening to me. Or are you just doing your own thing, saying what you need to say, and don't ever think, oh, someone's actually listening to me?
I think that's something that I had to train myself on is, you know, even before I went to CFO, I knew I wanted to do radio. And so I would listen to these people that do it professionally. And once in a while they were doing their show, once in a while, they would give advice on, you know, how they got in the industry, what they did to hone their craft. And I think something that I made sure to make important to me is the idea of when you're speaking, even if it's just you and the microphone, speak as though you're speaking to somebody, like they're there listening to you.
Yeah.
Because to me, it's hard to explain, but if you're on the receiving end of it, you can kind of tell when someone is speaking to you and when someone's speaking at you, or when someone is just kind of, they're just talking, but they're not really connecting. There's a way to connect with people. Sometimes it's just with analogies. Sometimes it's with, you know, asking rhetorical questions in a way that makes it sound like they're asking you directly.
Yeah.
And so there's different techniques to do, but yeah, for sure. I think one of the best ways to do radio, podcasting, whatever it is, public speaking, speak as if you're talking directly to someone, even if they're not there in the room, because you can connect to that, even if you're not listening to it live.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting to me because, you know, obviously for the podcast, and I've done some radio, I mean, I've been on the radio before, but I don't think of this. I mean, of course, I think of the people listening. I think of the listeners. I think of you guys listening right now. You know, what's entertaining? What to talk about? I mean, not entertaining in the sense of entertaining, but like what's useful information? What's good information? Entertaining in that sense. And of course, entertaining in other senses as well. But I don't sit here and think that, oh, people are listening to me right now. I don't know if that makes sense at all, but in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, hey, I know people are going to listen to this, hopefully, but I'm not thinking about speaking to people right now. I'm thinking about the conversation that we're having and, you know, kind of incorporating them into the mix. But really, it's just kind of you and me chatting up about this topic, that type of thing.
Right. And I think it kind of depends on, especially with podcasting and radio, it kind of depends on what you're doing on the air. If you're giving weather information or if you're just having a conversation with someone, that tends to be what you think about more versus if, at least in my case, if I'm doing something by myself, if I'm doing a podcast where I'm making an argument about something, whether it's, you know, my stance on whatever this topic is, or what do I think about this movie or something like that. If it's just me, it's easier to think of it as I'm talking to somebody else, even if they're not there, versus Yeah, I mean, if it's you and somebody else, I mean, that's the thing too, is you want to feel as a listener that these people are talking to each other, and they're not just one's talking, the other talks over, or one talks and the other one talks, but they're actually communicating with each other, and it feels like they're in the same room together, if that makes sense.
That is super. I mean, I've done radio sometimes. I've been on the radio for for theater stuff, promoting theater stuff. And then recently, the last time I was on the radio was actually it was with the local radio station promote their podcast website that they were starting, and I was kind of curious about a way to advertise and stuff, and they were just kind of like, yeah, come on in and let's talk about it. And then all of a sudden they had me on the air talking about it, and I didn't think about it for a second. I didn't think, oh, people are gonna listen to me, people are gonna hear me. But the reason I kind of brought that story up was because I wasn't nervous. Like, I was just like, oh, I kind of just jumped in. Like, it wasn't planned. Like, they were like, oh, hey, you want to come on the radio? And I was like, yeah. Then, like, 2 seconds later, I was talking on the radio. But one of the things that I did, especially when I first started the podcast, was I wanted to bring in people that might have been a little uncomfortable, maybe in some senses, because, maybe get them, whether it be get them out of their comfort zone or whatever the case may be. But there were a lot of people early on, and even with new people still now, I ask them, I say, so were you nervous? And they're like, yes. And then I say, oh, but how do you feel now afterwards? And they're like, I forgot we were recording. So it's very funny just to kind of see that interaction with people who were nervous before they started, but then as it progressed on, they weren't they've kind of forgot about the nervousness. So, maybe that'll help with on stage public speaking, but at the same time, people are also staring at you the entire time.
It's true.
So.
Well, it also just reminds me of, kind of what it's like when you're trying to have a conversation with someone for the first time. And sometimes, depending on who it is, maybe you're nervous, you're not sure what to say, how it's going to go. But then when you start talking to them, and you start it, it you start clicking, and then it feels natural. And before you know it, you forgot that you were nervous. It's kind of like that, which I don't know. That's one of the things I like about communication in general is, yeah, I can be nervous about doing it, but once I've actually started doing it, it just feels natural. It just feels right. It's like when I did the drama stuff when I was younger, I was terrified getting up on stage in front of people because, like you said, they're staring at you the whole time. So you're like, if you mess up or stumble on something, I don't know about you, but I'm really quick to find that person that notices when you've stumbled and react to it. And it's embarrassing. But at the same time, once I actually got on the stage and I actually started doing what I rehearsed to do, at least for me, the nervousness, the feeling of being terrified just kind of went away. And from that point on, I was solely focused on the performance, making sure I got the lines right, and just went through that. And by the time I was done with it, it's kind of fun, actually.
Theater is a different ball game in my opinion. As I kind of hinted in the intro, was that I don't believe public speaking and theater are the same thing, even though a lot of people think that they are the same thing, which maybe it can be classified into two separate things, whether you're performing or presenting. If you're performing something, that's different. In a sense, this podcast is a performing. It's not a presentation. There's no Excel PowerPoint or anything. And so
Thank
maybe,
goodness.
yeah, thank goodness. But maybe it's just, in that sense, people think about it in that sense. I mean, people don't think about it in that sense, is that in one way, in one thing that you're doing, you're performing, and the other thing that you're doing, you're presenting. And theater is just a whole different thing because, you know, we can talk about, let's kind of like get into theater and everything. But yeah, obviously the biggest thing about theater, which you can argue that there has this aspect in public speaking as well, is that there is a, I don't want to say the word disconnect, but there is a literal barrier between your audience and the stage. Of course, like I said, that argument could be said with public speaking because you've got your audience and you've got you presenting. But I don't know. Like, what's your thoughts on that? Is that debatable? Is that not debatable?
That theater and public speaking are different?
Well, just the fact that, just the way that the setup is, I mean, obviously there's different ways of public speaking. Some people can public speak in the round. Some mm-hmm. people can public speak, you know, in a classroom or whatever. But do you, but do you think that disconnect between the theater audience, I mean, people go to the theater not expecting to be at a presentation. They expect to be not, you know, that type of thing.
Right. Yeah, I think, again, it just kind of depends on what you're doing as mm-hmm. far as radio and podcast. Certainly there's the more conversational podcast. There's the more informational type of podcast. Something that's more of like a lecture or a presentation. But I've always loved the description from one of my mentors in radio, actually, who referred to radio as theater of the mind. And it basically, one of the things that is the most fun about radio, and especially with people that can do it well, is the ability to tell a story without any visuals. And a lot of time that comes with its own level of theater. Like I said, with the way you enunciate, the way you put emphasis on certain things, the mm-hmm. way you just tell a story and draw things together is very much a type of theater that, while it may lack the visual quality that you would expect in an actual theatrical performance, if you can do radio properly, it's the ability to put a mental or a visual image in someone's mind without showing them anything. It's kind of like reading a book in a sense. Like, you're able to read a book, you can imagine the scene, you can imagine the characters, even though you're just reading words on a page. It's just another form of communication. But yeah, I mean, there's certainly things that are different about actual theater, as far as, you know, casting for people, playing different roles. You're not necessarily, I mean, I guess it depends, but you're not necessarily in theater playing yourself. You're usually playing a different character.
Yes.
And you're trying to act out that character, where there's definitely like podcasts and things like that you can find that have that in it. But for the most part, it's usually someone giving you their take on something, or describing something in a certain way. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely can see the difference there. And plus, there's some physical training almost that goes into theater, as far as, you know, especially if there's like musical pieces or there's like dances, or you've got to, you know, walk to this section and, you know, do this or do that with your hands. And, you know, just kind of depends on, you know, what you're interacting with, like a table or some sort of set piece, something like that.
And I think what you said is the prime, perfect, and really one of the only reasons why I will argue that theater and public speaking are completely different. And that is because in one, you are yourself, and the other one, you are not yourself. You know, you're portraying a character, a caricature, a whatever. You know, you are not the person that you are portraying. I mean, yeah, you could be. There's method acting and, you know, stuff like that. You know, you talk about that forever. And there's typecasting and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you are not the person that you are portraying to people on stage, which usually in public speaking, you don't have that barrier. You don't have that, oh, I'm portraying a character. You are yourself. And I think that's one of the biggest arguments about it, with saying that they are different, because one, you're yourself, one, you're not. And that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, unless you're doing like a public debate where you're trying to represent one side and something like that. But yeah, I mean, it just depends on what you're doing. But yeah, there's certainly differences.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I was going to mention, just because you went back to radio, I mean, there's even like radio programs, you know, like every year they do the Christmas story on or a Christmas Carol, or what's the one? What is it? What's it called? It's the what's the one with every time an angel or bell rings? What's that one?
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. You know, they have those as radio programs every year during Christmas. And
go ahead.
Oh, maybe just like the local theater group has, you know, went to the radio station and they, you know, put that on. I used air quotes there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you ever grow up listening to The Adventures in Odyssey on the radio?
Oh, no.
So that would be an example, I would say, of combining the two, of combining theater and radio, because those were actual broadcasts that aired on the radio that you can still listen to, I think. I don't know where you can get them, but but yeah, where they are actually putting on a performance of the characters that you would watch on the show, but it's made in radio form. And there's things like that too. There's other examples that we could use for that, but suffice to say, there's a wide variety of different ways to communicate with people. It's a never-ending thing.
Yeah. Well, and I guess I didn't even think about it, but you know, I was trying to think of the best way to figure out, you know, with the whole theater thing of the separation of the audience and the people on the stage, is I guess there is a not a literal but a figurative wall between the, you know, we're taught that there's a wall between the audience and the stuff happening on stage. I mean, even the proscenium is like in the shape of a TV that's like, oh, this is where all the action happens, and you know, like you're watching a TV or whatever. But there literally is a figurative wall, you know, the fourth wall. You know, people say, oh, they broke the fourth wall. Oh my gosh, they're talking to the audience. Even then, I mean, yes, they're talking to the audience, but even then, they technically didn't break. Like, they're not themselves all of a sudden. It's like unless the show calls for that. But still at the same time, that, I mean, unless it's an improv thing, but, you know, that person is not portraying themselves when they're breaking the fourth wall. Because it's still, you know, maybe that person is super nervous and they still did it because it's acting. It's acting. So, but it's, yeah, there's just something about it that there's that disconnect. I guess, I mean, and that's the thing. I don't want to say the word disconnect because you don't want that disconnect between the audience and the person performing on stage. Because if you have that, well, then you're not a very good actor. Because you want people to be engaged. You want people to be connected to what you're doing and saying and performing. So I don't want to use the word disconnect, but there has to be that, not has to be, but there is that difference between audience, performer, audience, presenter of public speaking.
Right. They understand that you're not portraying yourself. You're portraying a different character.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
Folks, if you've ever watched a show and you're not a theater person, I don't know why you'd be listening to this. Maybe you're a public speaking person. But if you ever truly you know what? Theater people are theater people. They are who they are, whatever. You can say what you want about them. But
And we have, but
you know, they could be portraying that person as themselves. They could not be. That person could be nothing like the person that you just watched for 2 hours. That is the beauty of it. So, you know, hopefully if you ever watch someone and you're like, wow, that person's a horrible person, then you meet him and they're like the best person ever. That's the beauty of theater. And then you think to yourself, holy crap, that person is a phenomenal actor.
So. I forgot what it was called. There was a performance that was done at C of O that had to do with World War II era. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember what it was.
It's Railway to Heaven. Is that the one you're talking about?
That might have been it.
Yeah, because that one was about the prisoner of war.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
What are you gonna say? I'm kind of nervous right now.
I was gonna say, hopefully you're not sitting there watching someone portray a Nazi soldier. You're like, wow, they are really good at that role because that's how they are. You know, that would be unfortunate. You know, to be too good at that role.
Well, and that's kind of interesting is, you know, playing. I mean, this is a different topic, of course, for another podcast. I mean, I can talk about, you know, theater and the disconnect and what people see you as portraying on stage. I mean, in college, I was typecasted as the angry dad who was money, work, never have time for your family. And then he had a change of heart at the end. And then, you know, so I was always considered kind of a grumpy person. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I am a grumpy person, but, it's so strange how people see you on stage and then how you are in real life. I mean, you are not the person that you are on stage. It's fascinating. And you can definitely have a conversation, even a podcast episode, just about an actor's viewpoint in that scenario and an audience viewpoint in that scenario. But you're exactly right. Kind of circling back around, you know, the kids that performed as Nazis in that movie or in that show, you know, they were always so nervous. They were always so nervous about greeting the people afterwards, because a lot of them, you know, were veterans, whether they served in World War II or not. And they were always so nervous about meeting the public afterwards, because I mean, that is the thing, you know, you do something on stage and I mean, obviously it's not real. But you know, whether it comes to fighting someone or hitting someone, obviously not actually hitting someone. I mean, yes, it does happen, but you know, it's all cleared and all safe, folks. Okay. It's all okay. But yeah, it is interesting to just see that disconnect, I guess. I'm using that word disconnect again. But I'm not using it in the sense of disconnect of the audience to the performer. It's the disconnect of realizing that the person on stage is performing and not that actual person.
Right.
So, don't get me on a soapbox, Blake, because that is definitely a topic that is for discussion, because I never realized, you know, as a performer, you don't realize that people actually think that way, that people actually think that you're that person on stage, you know. I gotta stop, or else I'm gonna be on this. Woo! Okay, I gotta stop this, because I'll be on this for an hour, and we'll be like, so public speaking. So, but no, there is, circle back, Lucas, don't go down that rabbit hole, it's too deep for you to crawl back out of, but yeah.
That's what she said.
Office reference, it's interesting because as a public speaking, you know, as presenting, you want that person, you want to be yourself presenting, because that helps you connect with who you're presenting to. While in theater, you want that, you know, portraying another person to connect with the audience. So, oh man, that was a scary, that was scary. It could have been bad, Blake. It could have been very bad.
Could have been really bad.
That rabbit hole could have been bad. I could, you know, I've never had a rabbit hole that I couldn't get myself out of. That might have been the one. That might have been the one. But, oh my gosh, that's so funny. So, you know, I kind of want to talk a little bit about one particular thing, and it's not necessarily similarities. It's consistent things that are, you know, common in all areas. And one of the things I'm kind of want to talk about first is nervous tics. Have you ever been watching someone perform or watching a presenter and starting and notice like nervous tics?
Yeah, I have. It's awkward.
Oh, it's awkward.
It is.
Really? What is it? Do you know?
I mean, you know, just sitting there and you can tell the person's kind of nervous when they're speaking. You can kind of hear the cracks in their voice. You can kind of see the sweat even from all the way in the back. You know, you can almost feel the heartbeat from that person. So it's understandable. I mean, I've certainly had those moments myself where I'm speaking and I get really nervous. Even if I've memorized everything, it's still kind of nerve wracking, but yeah, I've seen it.
I mean, I don't want to share my nervous tics. I bet people who have listened to every episode kind of know what my nervous tics are. But you feel, and I know what my nervous tics are too, and I try my best to not do them. But even if something's saying the word like, or or, you know, stuff like that, that is kind of hard to, I mean, have you ever heard someone even just talk normally and say like 100 times?
It's one of the most annoying things, I think, in the, I don't want to exaggerate, but probably the history of mankind, when someone overuses like. Nah, it's something I guess you kind of get used to. I don't know how far back generation-wise this goes where people use the word like so much, but certainly for our generation it's pretty common. And it's one of those things where especially when I was training for radio, I really had to work on that. My big one is that's the thing that I struggle with the most. Usually if I'm doing something by myself, I'm a lot less likely to do that. But if I'm talking to someone, it goes back to just talking to someone in person. You just resort back to those old bad habits of using filler words when you don't need to. So it's just something that I had to just really train myself on when I'm broadcasting. But certainly nervous tics for me is saying or I don't know, maybe the way I move my hands. Like maybe I got critiqued once because I think I had a jacket on or something when I was giving the performance, and I would constantly put my hands in my pockets. And that was definitely a tic. So I had to work on that, but it's kind of interesting when you learn, because you don't really think about it. You just kind of do what comes natural to you. And then afterwards you're like, man, you need to stop doing that. Okay.
It's like, did you know what you were doing? That's usually what happens in theater. You know, they do the scene, and then the director usually walks up to the person and they say, "Do you know what you were doing?" And usually the actor or actress is like, "What are you talking about?" And they either know they have a nervous tic already, or the director is telling them they have a nervous tic. And which isn't bad. There's nothing's bad about having a nervous tic. It's just learning how to stop that from happening when you do get nervous. I think, to be completely honest with you, I don't know if I'm going down another rabbit hole. I'm not getting on my soapbox again. But I don't consider a bad nervous tick. Because, I mean, yes, you need to know what you're going to say before you say it. And there's no filler words and blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, you know, at the same time, you to say it's almost like going, like you're thinking of what you're saying. Like, what would you rather have? Mm-hmm. Someone say, or someone just to sit there? Right. I'd rather have you say, I mean, it's a podcast, but I'd rather you have you say, because I know you're thinking, rather than thinking that I lost you because you didn't say anything. I just said it.
Oh, there he goes.
Oh, there we go. Rabbit. No, just
he is a very thoughtful man, Lucas.
But it is it's harder to notice in theater because you are obviously portraying someone else. But at the same time, if you can tell nervous tics about people, I think that's a skill, kind of. If you can tell what someone's nervous tic is, unless it's like blatantly obvious, and that's kind of a skill, in my opinion.
Yeah, and, you know, when I go to a show of some kind, I'm not necessarily one that wants to look for that. Again, unless you said it's just so blatantly obvious that everyone notices. But, yeah. I don't know, I go to see the performance. I go to get engrossed in the story of what they're portraying, that I don't really pay much attention to someone's nervous tics on a regular basis. So
I mean, you usually see it in high school performances or community theater performances. If you're going to a Broadway or professional show and you see people with nervous tics, I'd be a little worried about what you're about to watch.
Yeah,
just saying. I mean, no judgment whatsoever. I'm not being judgmental. I'm just saying, I'd watch out a little bit. But but that is an aspect that everybody has. I mean, everyone has nervous tics, and more so, it's in the rehearsal process, I think, for theater, for the theater process. And you can definitely tell the nervous tics if someone's not comfortable when they're actually performing, but you can actually tell the nervous tics about someone who's presenting as well. So I kind of wanted to talk about that a little bit because that kind of fascinates me a little bit. But last topic of discussion before we wrap this up is, what is it? You know, what is it about speaking in front of other people that is so nerve-wracking? Like, are they worried about what the people are thinking? Worrying about, you know, if they're saying the right thing or not. I mean, even think of like comedians and stuff getting up and being funny. I'm using air quotes, being funny. But what if they aren't? You know, what is it about being so nervous? I mean, it's the, I think if you were to look up fears, you know, I should have done it before we, you know, to see actually where it was on the list. But I'm pretty sure it goes heights, and then public speaking. What is it? What is about it? What's your thoughts on it?
Do you think it has something to do with introvert versus extrovert? Because I feel like if you're far more extroverted, you're less likely to care. Not saying that you are guaranteed not to, but, you know, as someone who's naturally introverted, it kind of goes back to why I struggle with talking to people in general, as far as just walking up to someone and starting a conversation, is because there is that fear of what are they going to think, you know, mm-hmm. do they even want to talk to me, and on down the list. So for me, that played a big role in the fear, is you've got everybody watching you, and my natural tendency is to not be the center of attention. I would much prefer not to be the center of attention as far as physical eye contact attention. I would much rather hide behind a microphone and a monitor, and that's it. But what you know what what's kind of interesting too is I always found myself being more nervous the smaller the crowd size. If I was speaking in front of a pretty big audience, quote unquote big audience, big for a small town, small town guy, I would be a far less likely to be that nervous about it, because there's so many people there that I'm looking more towards, you know, maybe, you know, you train your eye on that one focal point that you look at as you're walking across, you know, different parts of the stage, and you might look in the general direction of the audience, but you're not necessarily looking right at each person.
They say, whereas like, look right above the back row's head.
Right, yeah. Right. Whereas when I was in public speaking class, and you've got, you know, a dozen or two more students, you know, 20 to 30 students, it's a lot more nerve-wracking because they're a lot closer to you. More than likely, they're people that you are more familiar with, even if it's on a pretty acquaintance level. You've been around them enough. And, yeah, it's just that fear of screwing up, of being laughed at. Even if it's totally irrational that people would laugh at you, like people that know you, that get along with you, friends, family. But it's, yeah, you want to perform at your best, so you don't want to make any mistakes at all. At least that's what would go through my mind.
Yeah. Well, in public speaking, it's a lot harder to cover up your mistakes. I mean, you could literally just stop and say, oh, I'm sorry, I misspoke. This is what I meant. Like, and then move on with your life. In performing, it's a little harder if you say the wrong lines out of sequence. It messes up other actors and stuff. It's a little bit harder to cover with that. And so maybe you're right. I mean, but at the same time, I've heard it. I mean, I've messed up on stage before. I know, right? So surprising. But the audience doesn't know that you've messed up. And if you work with good people, they're easily to kind of swing it back and put it, you know, make it make sense again. But I did look it up, actually. So the term is actually glossophobia. That's the fear of public speaking. And it says that it's a very common phobia, and one that is believed to affect up to 75% of the population.
I believe it.
So, and honestly, yeah, I'd believe it too, because it's just one of those things. I mean, obviously they have the phrase, well, just picture the audience in their underwear. It's just a popular saying that people say to people that are nervous about public speaking.
Which I never understood that thing, because first off, if I'm standing in a room and everybody there is just in their underwear, I'm either going to laugh or I'm going to run.
I wonder where that phrase came from. Like,
I would like to know. It's kind of concerning. Like, who's standing there thinking, oh, I just need to think about people in their underwear? It's like, why? I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I every time I hear that, I think,
oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay, I just looked it up. So it says, in theory, picturing your audience naked or in their underwear is intended to make you feel more powerful, more in control, and somehow less vulnerable.
I think I'd be
more vulnerable. I'd be like, what? You guys in your underwear?
Yeah. Yeah, there's people that you would not want to see in their underwear, but that's a totally different conversation. Yeah. I just try to picture the whole room empty. That's what I try to do.
Interesting.
Doesn't always work, but that's what I try to do.
Well, it is interesting to say the least, kind of, you know, wrapping it up here, talking about public speaking in theater, the differences, the similarities. There are a lot of similarities between theater and public speaking, you know, and I think we touched on a lot of them. But I think the differences kind of outdo the similarities, and they are not the same thing. What's your thoughts on that? Do you think they're the same thing or not?
I think they share a lot of the same level of talent, a lot of the same level of, you know, just the level of practice you put into it, the skill involved. You know, you can take it as far as you want to with public speaking. You can make it a lecture, you can make it a dramatic tale of something to illustrate your point. But yeah, I mean, there's certainly similarities and differences between the two, but I think in some ways they complement each other. You can use theater to elevate your speaking abilities, and obviously if you're working on being a better speaker, that'll certainly help with your theater performances.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. There are different types of public speaking, if you want to say that. There is a version of standing up in front of a group of people presenting something, speaking to the public on the radio, or even performing in a show on the stage. One is not better than the other, but I would say they are definitely not the same thing. Some people are great at public speaking. Some people aren't. Some people are great at theater. Some people aren't. You know, it just depends on what suits you the best. So thanks for being on the show, Blake. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, always great to be here and talk to your audience about all these fun issues that I'm sure a lot of people have thought about.
All these deep conversations. We could have gotten a lot deeper if we went down that rabbit hole earlier.
That's right.
Oh, man. But, well, no, thank you again for being on the show, Blake. And thank you for listening, you listeners out there. Shows comes out every 2 weeks on Thursday. You can follow me on Facebook and YouTube, the Sure IDC Podcast. Sure IDC is one word, as you probably already know. You can also find me wherever podcasts are found. So thanks for listening. Stay safe out there. And remember, you don't care.
Oh, yeah.